Thanks, Sebastian. I'm really happy to be here again. It was some years ago, but the place looks it's the same in many ways, which makes me truly happy. I will be speaking about reducing uncertainty, and it's essentially a book project that I'm working on, and I will try to. And it relates to an article which I think it might have been sent out here, so people would have had the chance to have a look at that paper. But the idea really is to try to turn the question of uncertainty, which was central, into the question of how is uncertainty reduced. So maybe we could start with some very kind of practical problems. I mean, the first one would be how to invest if you have 100,000 euros to get 4% in annual return. And of course, there are ways to find this out, to calculate the risks, and Arcos would know a lot about this, of the alternatives of investing in money. There are other questions. What team will win the FIFA World Cup this summer? This is not uncertain.
Germany.
No, this is not uncertain. You know this. Oh, no. But of course, we know this is inherently uncertain. It has to be fought out on the pitch. I mean, there are structural conditions, but we cannot know. You can bet on it and so on and so forth, but still we don't know it. Well, you can also ask if there's such a thing as the best team, as a category, which is to be kind of uncertain about. But I think if there is no such a category, this might be an open question. So this is a more, it's not even uncertain, it's ambiguous. It's an ontic problem of if there is such a category or not. And I think most people would say, since Germany is the best team, there is also such a category. But nonetheless, it's an issue of another nature. The focus of the talk will be, how is uncertainty reduced? And I think, to give a short answer, it's by providing some kind of publicly available knowledge that is produced in social interaction between people and can be used by very many. And this leads to some type of reduction of the uncertainty, which individuals and organizations, that is, various types of actors face and encounter. So my study is a study on how uncertainty is reduced. Not to deal with the uncertainty per se, that this would be a topic of decision theory, developing individual strategies, the problem of double contingency in Parsons, and Jens Beckett has written extensively on this too, the development of social ties for individuals to reduce uncertainty. There's a lot written on that, but that will not be my focus. This is not to deny it, but to say that it's something partly different. So my focus is on types of uncertainty reduction, and I will basically talk about these different types, or either types, which of course will be related, connected, overlapping in real empirical life. So the talk will start by speaking, I will start by speaking about the question of uncertainty and the research questions, focusing on how question. And then move on to speaking about reduction of uncertainty in relation to uncertainty. And then the bulk of the talk will be on the various types of uncertainty reduction. And I divide them into two forms. I will give more empirical or practical examples. Those which establish general principles for states of the world, and those that produce states of the world. And states of the world are facts or things that we know and we can use so when we want to reduce uncertainty. So if we know how to measure the temperature, we can know the temperature and we can then predict what clothes we will use and so on and so on. That's a very practical, simple example. These can be combined by causal connection so that if you know A follows from C, you can predict things. And these are states of the world, known things that we have come to learn by science or other means. I will get back to it. And then eventually I will sum it up and present some research to do. I think when it's about uncertainty, what I find, I mean, I do certainly find it as a central problem, and I also find it's a general problem, and I think it's particularly interesting that it's also a problem that is essentially shared by economists and sociologists. So I mean, later this next month, I will go and give a speech at to economists, and then they're like extreme like mathematical modelers. They build models, so they have a keen interest in what they call Nietzschean uncertainty, which is so in a sense we share the same problem, and I think there are certainly a lot of avenues that could be opened up to have more collaborations on based on this similarity, so to speak, their agreement. And to give a short account of the central concept, not just uncertainty, but also those which are related, and I think this comes as no surprise, and I think perhaps not so controversial, but nonetheless it's important to make this. The uncertainty I define as lack of knowledge concerning how to act with predictable outcomes. You can define it differently, but it's essentially something which is epistemic, that we could know, and then the reduction would be there, or we would have certainty even, we could know things, and it's future-oriented. So what I speak about are these states of the world which are, so to speak, known or not known. And if they're not known and the correlation between them are not known, we have uncertainty. Risk is essentially when we assign numbers to the alternatives, so the probabilities of the outcomes, and we can make calculations. And I think there's quite a lot, and again, Arcos would be the expert on this topic, but that risks are introduced in very many ways, even though there is a fundamental uncertainty. So we put numbers on things to make it look more predictable. And if you go to a business school, you would definitely learn how to put numbers on things in order so you can make calculations, even though the assigning of the numbers is a kind of very tricky and certainly uncertain process. Finally, the ambiguity, this is the three concepts I work with. This is the condition when we do not know if there is a thing or not. We don't know if there is a class. If we know that someone stands behind the door, then we know this is an uncertainty. But if we don't know if there is a door, there is an ambiguity. I work with three questions. Why is uncertainty reduced? How is uncertainty reduced? And what consequence do uncertainty reduction have? I think the why questions is somewhat, well, obvious. If there's uncertainty and we can increase the likelihood that we can cope with the world and cope with the world in a better way, probably there is an interest to reduce uncertainty by many. It comes up in problems of coordination and so on and so forth. How is uncertainty reduced? Yes, there's a lot of research on various types of uncertainty reduction, but this is the core question of, and it's certainly what I will focus on today during the speech. I think it's also interesting to pose the question, what consequence do uncertainty reduction have for those involved in the processes? Why should one study this? I think it's one way to try to systematize the existing knowledge on uncertainty reduction, which you find in various fields, and I can't say I will encompass all those fields for sure, but there's an idea of trying at least. And I think it would make sense to reduce the great empirical variation into types. And also, and I think this is kind of the main thing here, is that to embed existing studies. There are a lot of studies, for example, Lucien Carpic's study, which is to a large extent on various forms of uncertainty reduction. And I will perhaps come back to that specific study, because some of these are very much based on individualized ways of reducing uncertainty. That is, you create a tie with someone, and that the tie established perhaps reduces the uncertainty of double contingency, or it can be a means to get information. But there are also others. He speaks about ratings and rankings and so forth, which is publicly known knowledge that can be used by all in the room, not just those who have a tie, which is the essence of a network. If one look at this from a historical point of view, and of course I'm not a historian, so I don't claim to make this a complete by far, I think You can see, I try to read a lot of kind of classic anthropological studies, which is quite interesting. So I read about what used to be called Eskimo societies. It's all the titles are called Eskimo societies. And you find, because they live on the very end of civilization, that's the presentation that's being stated in these classic books. There's a death is present all the time, and this is a direct uncertainty of life and death that these people face, and how they behave, and how they do not let the small children of female sex live, and so on and so forth. There's a lot on that, and if you contrast that to the uncertainties that we have, you see that their uncertainties are quite different. But the issue of uncertainty is somehow present. Of course, due to historical development in terms of religion, various forms of institutions, organization, not the least science, we have come to know a lot of things to reduce uncertainties and improve life as a consequence. And I think already Pareto was really close on this and spoke about the connection between development and how we can create causal links between A and B and thus know how to behave rationally. So this extended body of knowledge reduces uncertainty. But of course we have our systemic risks, and Ulrich Beck is one who has written on this, and some of which are very hard to reduce. So for example, we have electricity, and we can rely on this as individuals, but this creates, if there are nuclear plants, systemic risks that we cannot, so to speak, as individuals, or perhaps not even as collectives, really cope with. And there are other forms of reduction of uncertainty, which is about essentially transformation of uncertainty. Luhmann writes clearly about this absorption of uncertainty, which, so to speak, it happens in one organization. He speaks about it particularly in relation to organizations. And this organization absorbs some uncertainty within its borders, so to speak, within its organization, but it creates other uncertainties. For example, one is that an organization that offers contracts until retirement age reduces most likely uncertainty of loyalty, but may have created an uncertainty about the productivity of its labor force. So of course, this is a typical example we're well aware of in academia. And the solutions in various countries are very different. But how to address uncertainty reduction? That is the main question of my project. What I try to do is to, and this is what I assume will describe these different ideal types of uncertainty reduction, divided into two categories. The first are the principles for and concrete states of the world. So the first is institutions, or what I will soon speak about, grown institutions. The second are decided institutions or formal institutions. The third would be evaluations against standards. So these are ways in which uncertainty reduced because there are principles for how to behave for people, for organizations, and we can orient to it, and we can by orienting to it, we can act in predictable ways, and also we can see how others act in ways which make their acts predictable, and we can rely on that. I'll go back to that more in detail. And then there are also these 4, 5, and 6 form for setting states of the world. That is, in many cases, uncertainty is still there, so to speak. It's not solved. The problem is, it's still uncertain. So, for example, who's the best author in the world? Again, this problem of which team will win of those playing the world championship. That's a kind of, you create forms for settling this type of uncertainty. And they might speak of us as in terms of decision, convaluation, and contest. And contest will be like a sport case. So certainly, if we speak about these types, certainly means that we can predict our action, since we know the states of the world. It can be a device to predict weather or to behave in a conversation. All types reduce certainty within the specific domain. And again, if it reduces uncertainty in one domain, within one academic organization offering permanent position, of course it creates a lot of problem for all the others who don't get this, and uncertainty for those who don't get this position, because it blocks them from getting it, and it increases the likelihood, perhaps, or even the uncertainty that they won't get a position at all. And the states of the world that I speak of are public. They're known to more people. It may be in academia, it may be in the political sphere, or it may be larger or smaller, but it's not just individualized uncertainty reduction. So in a way I repeat what I said, but in a slightly different way. So if we go to these types of uncertainty reduction, and starting with the first, institution. I found this, which I by and large think is a correct observation by Williamson. The confession is that we're still very ignorant about the institutions. Well, it's not written yesterday, but still in terms of scientific development, it's not so long ago. And he also says that neoclassical economics will dismiss some institutions, and that much of organizational theory lacks scientific ambition. And I think if you read the handbook of institutional theory, whatever it's called, from 2008, I mean, this is certainly true. Basically what they're saying, we like institutions and they are important, but we have no clue whatever what it is. And I think they have made some improvement, but this book made me start to think, and I saw that, well, some of the economists have made clear distinctions that we can make use of. And I think here in this house, a lot of good work has been done of institutions. And I think this idea of streak of building blocks of social order is, of course, central. This is very much what we're speaking about. Jens Beckett has more detailed expression. Institutions stabilize actors' expectations, more actor-oriented there, by indicating what constitutes legitimate and likely behavior. So institutions are clearly important. But I think when we speak about institutions, it's rarely made clear what institutions is, and if there are types of institutions and how they come about. And I think this matters a lot for how we are to understand how uncertainty is reduced. For example, this distinction is sometimes acknowledged or recognized, but not so often explicitly. But Williamson does this very, very clear in his 2000 paper. Though he doesn't speak about them as grown institutions. As grown institutions, this is really what Bergen Luckmann speaks about. Order out of mutual adjustment. Something becomes stable out of people interacting. No one has the idea to make it so, but it just happens, as it were. The second part are formal institutions, which are results of decision. And this is what Douglas North and most economists zooms in on. So we have somehow a division of labor here, and Williamson even proposes that political science has a different level of institutional analysis. But I think it suffices for us to work with these two ideas, and not speaking about them as Williamson does, as levels, but as institutions that are, so to speak, come about through different processes. And are built differently and function partly differently from one another. So we spend some time with grown institutions, which then are states of the world. An institution becomes a state of the world, which we take for granted. So here is the definition. Institution is a grown state of the world that is taken for granted by several actors. That's the definition I offer of a grown institution. And this can refer to a lot of things: values, what is right and good and all these things which kind of was mentioned in, well, the building blocks or what makes action of actors more predictable. The role of virtues in society, for example, is of paramount importance for development of some kind of order and reduces uncertainty about how people will behave. And of course, this comes about, as you know, from institutionalizations, when these are internalized in process of interaction, blah, blah, blah. And I think it comes with this territory that institutions, if they're taken for granted, we don't think about them, and we notice them only when they don't function. And I think this has not been properly addressed in sociology. And you don't have to go to German philosophy to find this out, but this idea of that we go about in our life and notice something when it doesn't work. I mean, the computer, we don't think of it until it stops working. Then it becomes a theme. And that's the same with the institution. As long as everyone behaves, it's fine. But as soon as someone starts to do something which is out of the order, we start to think about it. So this malfunction, or in more general terms, in this negative way that is growing institutions are noticed. And this becomes what I see as the bedrock of all other forms of institutions, formal institutions. And of course, this is what Bergen Lachmann says: the more conduct is institutionalized, the more predictable and thus controlling it becomes. So there we have the uncertainty reduction as a clear kind of element. Okay, formal institutions, which I would say then rest on these growing institutions. Examples are many, again. But these are decided and prescribed behaviors supported by sanctions. That would be a formal institution. Usually we have some kind of authority to implement them, and this is basically what economists are writing on, these formal institutions. They explicitly say that these grown institutions are important, but they're not addressing them in their own research. So they take it for granted. And of course, we as sociologists and political scientists, we would say that the same institution, so to speak, the same formal institution would work very differently in different countries, for example, or nations, or cultures, or whatever, depending on the grown institutions being different. Yeah. So, in certain reductions, so to speak, rest on these grown institutions. And they're reduced by the fact that actors can act and predict outcomes of other people's actions. A third form, which is also very kind of actor-independent, in a sense, that is evaluation. If evaluation means that you can evaluate something, as it's defined here, as the process by which values conferred on actors on things, based on a given scale, independent of, well, the evaluants or those evaluating views or preferences. So whenever there are like institutionalized forms or standards, which means that you can evaluate whatever we evaluate, quality of research, I would say we cannot really evaluate, because every time we evaluate research quality, we bring in people to say if it's good or not. But if we check the quality of screws, we just put them into a machine and start to pull them and see when they break, and we can measure the quality. It's just independent of people's preferences or views. And that would be the pure objective evaluations that could be done based on scales or standards which may be then institutionalized themselves. And of course, technology is really, as you know, is based on this principle. And evaluations result in value scores and ratings, and here speaking only about evaluation in this narrow kind of objective sense. But as you know, evaluation has a different meaning. I mean, we are all evaluated in various ways. I mean, this institute is being evaluated, Uppsala University is being evaluated, and so on and so forth. And we sit on committees evaluating one another. And this is because there is no way to objectively measure quality. Because we think it matters that people say something. And what I call here is something different than So basically what I've left is this idea of objective evaluation. Here, evaluation is a consequence of people having preferences, views, opinions, making judgments, and so on and so forth. And I think it's clear that this, I mean, this is now when I take a short side point here, that the role of evaluation has gone down over time. In one sense, it's increased, but if you look at its use, the relative frequency, it has gone down since the 1980s, where it had this kind of heydays of when everything was suggested to be evaluated. And I think we've increasingly come to see the problems, and we all know this in academia, that, okay, evaluations are, well, part of the game and not necessarily giving us all the knowledge we need to really reduce uncertainty about quality. It gives something, but not the full story. Okay, so what I've talked about so far are these kind of person-independent ways of reducing uncertainty. Things have been institutionalized either by result of interaction or by decision, like the various laws, and you have within an organization, of course, you set up rules and so on and so forth. All this reduces uncertainty for people and they can act in a more predictable way. But there are other issues of uncertainty which cannot be resolved in this way. And this is what I turn now, the part two, so to speak. Forms of setting states of the world. When we create states of the world through existing social structure, or what I call forms. When there are no principles existing for what is quality. When there is no way of objectively, by a standard, determining the price of a good that has been produced, for example. How do we do it then? What researcher will be found to get published and so on, and who will not? This we don't know. I mean, we know that, especially in Germany, the likelihood that if you stay within the system that you get the share is not so high. Is it one out of three or four who write a bill who actually end up getting, well, something? Well, you I don't know what the...
I was told it's 1 in 10.
Well, yeah, whatever. It's certainly uncertain. It's a lot of process you have to go through.
Yeah.
So, what is a good product, and what is worth? All these questions that we have, and we are uncertain about, and there are ways of reducing uncertainty in what I call forms, but not according to this. They are not institutionalized or in any way. I will get back to this soon. So what is good and bad, really? And this was really... I will not say so much on this, because these forms have been presented in the article that was sent around. So this part you will know more about than what I've just said so far. But nonetheless, I think it's important when you start to put these dimensions together, that's the aim of the project, as it were. But these forms reduce uncertainty, and here are built on symbol, and each form has some kind of stability. So there are roles, there are those evaluating, those being evaluated, and so on and so forth, and those contesting one another, or competing, or whatever. And there's a culture for how this is being done. So you can look at the form and to see what outputs they are producing. And these outputs are like states of the world. These become, or at least are attempts to create states of the world, which then can be used for people to reduce uncertainty. Thus, by having the world championship, we will know that Germany is the best team, or not. So it reduces that type of uncertainty. It's of course, very common in the art sector, and everyone has done studies in the field of valuation. We see that this is really a central thing, and we have a lot of text written on similar issues like this. So let me briefly go through these. Decision is the first. I mean, who will get the Nobel Prize in Literature? If you follow the development, it's uncertain if anyone will get it. But nonetheless, it's still uncertain who will get it. Eventually, someone will get it. If not this year, maybe not next year, but mentioned somewhere. So this decision is an attempt to create states of the world for others. But they are not decisions of general principles. For example, just to make it clear, if you make a decision about the law is about the principle of how to behave. And this can people orient to. But this is a state of the world which is like a fact of who will get the Nobel Prize. And thus, of course, it has implication for what is quality in literature and so on and so forth. Again, research money, Michel Lamont is a perfect example of an attempt by giving money to some people. And this is also a signal that these people are good researchers and should rightly have money because we think they are better than others. So those who get a prize, this is an attempt to create a quality standard, not a quality standard, but an idea of what is good in life, good in research. And I think here, I mean, it would be interesting to hear your commenting on this, Jens, but any attempts to create future, I mean, to create narratives, ideas about the future is or should be or what it will be like. I mean, my own little knowledge is about fashion forecasting. It's a certain attempt to reduce uncertainty because fashion forecasting is that you predict, you tell which colors will be in fashion next year. And that's really a decision. People come together or important place in the industry and make this decision. And of course, this is a performative action which turns into some type of certainty. It doesn't mean that we know exactly how the shirt will be cut and so on and so on, but still it gives direction and reduces some uncertainty for those producing the clothes and so on. So the point here is that these decisions are not just made by anyone. If I say that green will be the color of fashion in 2 years from now, well, you may take it or leave it, but you will leave it because it doesn't matter. It matters only if there is such a thing like a form, in the sense that some people have more say, there's like an organization or anything like it, in a field, in a kind of Bourdieusian, Fichteinian sense, perhaps. And there's a way to establish these decisions. The second would be variation or convolution, when people come together and do things together, and the outcome is the, so to speak, the result of the process of the form. So what's in fashion, again, is a good example. No one determines what is in fashion. It's something that is mutually adjusted by people wearing, observing, trying things out, and eventually something become in fashion for a time being. So it's a kind of reduction of uncertainty as a process of many people taking part. Markets are a paradigmatic example there, in which prices are results of actors coming together. No one can predict the price, it's just the outcome of many people. And each and every one may not want to create the price per se, but want to make a good deal. And the many trying to make good deals is result in price as an outcome. And the same with fashion, perhaps. So this is means that we have a structure of them, perhaps two rows, buyer sellers, for example, and they're an idea of a specific market of how we do it, so we can speak about a specific form. And just to make a small note here, this is an attempt to build in markets in a much more larger kind of social map, in which markets are just one instance among, and not the for uncertainty reduction. There are many non-economic convolutions. So markets are like a subcategory of what I call convolutions, rather than the category of its own. And finally, contest, which I, again, is a way of reducing uncertainty. You don't know which team is the best, and I think this fits well for sports, but not so well for other cases, I think, negotiations, and a classic duel is also like, I mean, you don't know until one has been defeated who is the best dueler. And again, if you read classic anthropology, there's a lot of this dueling and various types of rule organized warfare or combat or fighting. But of course, many of these examples are institutionalized in a given culture. So I have to admit that this form, so to speak, you can't say that war is a form of uncertainty reduction. That would be kind of way too much. But it also reduces uncertainty. So I think I will start to sum up. That my point is not that certainty is achieved. I mean, I talked about that over time, uncertainty and uncertainty have changed its concrete, its phenomenology, let's put it that way, for people. And it's certainly different in different parts of the world. And thus, the way and what is reduced differs between people. What I talked about are different types of uncertainty reduction. And again, these may lead to partial uncertainty reduction, which then leads to other uncertainties pop up in other places. So any attempt to reduce uncertainty is likely to create other uncertainties. And the decided order is one way of creating certainty. I mean, setting law, and the German etymology is really useful here for thinking about what it means. Standardization is, of course, another key element of deciding things for how to reduce uncertainty within an industry. But it's not only that certainty is reduced by decision or result of decision, but also by what we do together. And I think the most important thing is really, in my view, is this institutions, the growing order of institutions, which we cannot decide by definition, I mean, the way I define it. But we cannot decide that tomorrow you all have to trust one another. In some countries, people trust one another more, in others not. And this is not the result of that you have made this decision in some countries and not in others. And again, you cannot decide fashion. Many attempts have been made in Russia. It doesn't work. It's a logic of fashion is that people have some chance to make decisions of their own, what they wear and not to wear, and so on and so forth. So what is in fashion is an emergent order in a sense, or it reduces uncertainty as a result of these mutual adjustments. And what I talked about, again, I mean, I won't repeat myself here. These are the principles and the forms as two general categories of uncertainty reduction and under each. These are the suggestions I have. I mean, I'm clearly open to the fact that there might be others than those I just lined up. And this is actually the final slide here to try to sum it up a bit. It's also important to see that these forms, which I've talked about, are institutionalized. The Nobel Prize in Literature is currently awarded by the Royal Swedish Academy, but it doesn't have to be it. But this has become institutionalized. Also the Academy, of course, by giving this prize, but they do a lot of other things too. But the thing is that the form may be institutionalized, but the decisions, so to speak, the states of the world are not institutionalized themselves. And again, this is the important distinction between a law. If setting a law, that can become an institution. It can grow, we can come to take it for granted. But a decision that is made every year, it's not, the decision itself is not taken for granted, so to speak, in the sense that, that's not maybe the right expression, but you see the difference. I think more research when it comes to uncertainty should be obviously about the consequences for those, and this is part of my project, I try to see what consequences does it have for those being, for example, evaluated. In many cases, we want to be evaluated, but in other cases, people or firms, organizations are evaluated by others who then, so to speak, create the rank order or ratings of organizations who do not themselves, or the members of the organization who do not themselves want to be rated. All right. This opens up for comparative studies, which of course have also been done to some extent. I think one issue is kind of this temporality of states of the world. And I mean, this is more off the top of my head, Sebastian, but you work on durable goods. There's some kind of relation to this that, I mean, some states of the world tend to last for a very long time. If they're institutionalized, they can last for several hundred years, an institution, a growing order, or a law. But whereas others, these decisions last only for a short period of time, also a fashion forecast. I mean, you can't make a fashion forecast for 100 years. I mean, what does it mean? But there's like a temporality of these very types of uncertainty reductions. And I think when I started to look at the work on institutions, I wasn't really so happy as I kind of indicated. I think there's certainly more work that can be done on this specific field of research. And again, possibly in collaboration with economists who has done some interesting things. And I mean, there are people who do this already. But they tend to focus then on either like the formal institutions or these what I call grown institutions. And I think the combination of them and the relation is of paramount importance, and also to make this distinction. But I think I would prefer to leave it like that and open up for any questions and comments to what I said.